We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Pretty good shot to get toasty.
Middays on the Score.
Bernstein and McKnight, 670 the Score. Lots to do today. Been talking a lot of Cubs after their next loss to the Pirates, where the offense looks seemingly absolutely lost. They got another one today with Yu Darvish on the bump. That game, of course, on the Score. White Sox have Dylan Cease going today. That'll be a fun one this afternoon, part of a doubleheader. They were rained out last night. Got a Joe Maddon conversation with Lawrence Holmes yesterday. It was a good one. I was glued to it on my radio.com app as I was going back and forth from the doctor's office. And really good parts of the conversation about how Joe deals with losses, particularly losses where his team looks lost at this point in the season. Because it's not like it was when they were 2-7. It's not like it was when they were getting blown out by the Rangers. It's not early anymore. And Lawrence asked Joe what the difference is between his measurement of those losses versus the ones at this middle point of the season.
Where we're at right now in the season, we're into it. And if it happened more early on, that's one thing. But, well, first of all, Adbert, as a young pitcher, just had a bad night. And that set it up badly from the very beginning. So it's hard to evaluate the entire scope because we actually swung the bats pretty good last night. We scored runs, but it was hard to keep up with them because they just took us off to the woodshed when it came to swinging the bats. They were that good last night. So it's hard to totally evaluate that. But in general, I mean, we've been getting off to bad starts, and we've been trying to counterpunch constantly coming back in games because the games have not started out well. So by the conclusion of the game, on all these games, you can see that our guys are fighting to the last drop, but we have to do better. With too many mental mistakes, the things that are happening with permitting other runners to advance, easily giving up stolen bases, things of that nature. Those are the kind of things we got to stop. But give the Pirates some credit also. Their hitting has improved. You saw what Josh Bell is doing. That was no fun to watch last night. But it started Adbert having a tough night, but we got to start the game better.
I saw some of your comments after the game where you were talking about some of the mistakes, and you kind of chronicled a little bit of it there at the beginning, where you were saying, look, this is stuff that happens to younger teams. Is that what's disappointing, is that you do have a group of veterans that are making some of the mental mistakes that you talked about?
Yeah, I mean, I've had young teams. I've had really young teams, and when you got on the road, wow, it was just tough. A couple first years with the Devil Rays and then the Rays, it was hard because we just could not play the normal game on the road. I thought a lot of it was attributable to young pitching, which it was Adbert last night on the road. So I thought historically that's always been a concern, but our guys, we're better than this. We're absolutely better than this. We were capable of obviously not making these mental mistakes. We're capable of winning in a noisy ballpark. We're capable of all of this. But right now, we just got off the rails a little bit. We got to get back on the rails. How do you do it? A lot of it is based on conversation. I can't tell you they got to work harder. It's impossible. I can't tell you that. I think it's more about processing the moment, staying in the moment, moving on to the next one when something bad does not go our way. But it's a veteran group in regards to experience, and we have to get back to playing our brand of baseball.
For you, in trying to explain what you need, what you want out of guys, and I know that you've made some changes into the way that you've managed going into this season, being a little bit more involved of everything, being back out there on the field and on the backfields back in spring training. Does that apply to where things stand right now, where you might, maybe in years past, you would have not been as vocal, but maybe now you'll be more vocal?
At this time of the year, it's kind of the same. What I like to be able to do, when it comes to the hitting, I'm still really involved with the hitting. I've been involved with that. The other stuff, I really try to give my observations to the position coaches and have them take it, the pitching coach, and have them take it. I established from the beginning I'm going to be heavily involved in hitting, and I still am. But Poche and Sledge do a wonderful job, believe me, our guys are outstanding. I'm just, when I say involved, I mean, I'm like a, you know, I'm like a grad student almost. I'm having a good time with that. But yes, you have to, you empower your coaches. The coaches need to take the message. The players listen, man. And our work is great. We just, we have to have our minds in the present tense on a consistent basis.
So for the fan that's in there going, well, wait, what does Joe mean by that? How do you want your players to take that message of being in the present when it comes to a runners in scoring position situation?
Yeah, you have to process it well. I mean, I think sometimes our guys get a little bit in a hurry. The one thing I think I've noticed is that we're swinging a lot of bad pitches, a pitcher's pitch in that moment. And really, they're just trying to get this job done in advance or in a hurry, and we've got to slow that down a bit. We've got to really permit the pitcher to make a mistake. There's an old saying that the pitcher's the one that's in trouble, not you as the hitter. So we have to take advantage of that concept, which you really haven't to this point. It's a contagious thing. We got to get it rolling in the right direction. I believe that we can, but that's pretty much it. Believe it or not, excuse my voice. But even though we do this daily and these guys have been doing it for a long, long time, when you go up to the plate in a hot moment, sometimes your thoughts aren't as clear and as slow as they need to be. When a guy's really good at it, it looks pretty easy. When we're off, again, the rails a little bit, it doesn't look so easy. And pretty much it's just about slowing the moment down, getting a better pitch is primarily what it's all about.
How much do you worry about poor play reflecting on you?
Oh, it should. I mean, the people are going to do that immediately, and I understand that. That's just the way this industry works. That's the way the world works. I don't take it personally. I know what I do and how I do it. And I think the body of work speaks for itself. We're in a moment right now that we have to get through. And it's like I said, it's not like we need to do anything spectacularly different or add anything new. We just have to get guys to, again, think properly in a moment and process this moment in a better way. So I understand that that's how, people react. It's a long baseball season. You go through bad moments, and I've been there before. But I promise you, I don't take it personally.
Do you worry at all about what that might mean for you continuing to be the manager of the Cubs?
Not at all. Not at all. It's not connected. Everybody, we're really on the same page. And, I talk to the guys all the time, Jed, Theo, and all of the front office staff, as well as the coaching staff. We understand what's going on. I think we have it. We have processed it properly. We're trying to make the appropriate adjustments. So honestly, I don't worry about that. Going to the NLCS and winning World Series and 95 wins last year. I think the methods are good. We just have to extract it out of this particular group right now.
How do you go about managing the last five games before everyone can kind of take a deep breath and take a little bit of a break?
Well, I've been through this before, and I hope it doesn't. I mean, I'm not going to. With the Rays 1 year, we lost the last seven before the All-Star break and went to the World Series. Weird things happen, and that's why you have to be able to fight through them. Again, it's a conversation. Everybody's looking for the magic bullet always. I mean, ever since the microwave and McDonald's, everybody wants things to happen quickly, and they don't sometimes. You have to work through it and really absorb some very difficult moments to come out on the other side. And a big part of that is to be able to stick together as a group, individually, doing a lot of real soul searching of sorts, and then applying it to the group in general. That's what we need to do. It's an individual thing that turns into a group thing, and that's what we have to. That's how we have to resolve this. There's no extra batting practice. There's no extra ground balls. There's no more watching video. There's no more reading data. That has nothing to do with it. It's about your success is always controlled about what you think and how you think in your business, my business, whatever. I just have to really try to promote and help our guys get back on track, thinking the moment through properly, slowing it down, and then permitting our talents to show through.
I wonder if this might be an occasion for doing less.
It is. I mean, listen, we've been a little bit of a bad luck group, like hard balls in play that are caught. And then, like the Anthony's pop-up that gets ruled against us the other day in Cincinnati. There's been a lot of really little baseball strange things that you have to earn the right for those things to go back in your favor. You have to earn that baseball luck, and we haven't earned it yet. We have to play the game more cleanly in order to earn that to come back in our direction. So, ambiguous terms, maybe hard to quite understand unless you do this every day, but we have to earn all these little different breaks that are supposed to come our way or come to the way of a really good team. And we're very capable of that. We've done it in the past. And again, that's about slowing the moment down, being about the group, subjugating your own ego to your back pocket and making sure that it's all about the group.
Are you surprised that Kyle Hendricks is going to be back as soon as he is?
Kind of. I mean, yes and no. Even as this has been going along, he's been saying we feel really good. We've just trying to have been cautious with the whole thing. But like I've talked about this in the past. When you talk to a player that's been injured and the way they respond to you and smile easily and eyes wide open and listen, no, I'm feeling really good. I feel normal, natural. You got to listen to him. So he's been there. He's been there for a bit. So we feel good about him getting the start tonight and another one before the first half concludes. But he's in a good place physically and mentally right now.
The last time that we talked a little bit about Quintana, and then he goes out and he has a really solid start. So for him and for you, how important was that?
Well, it's really important. I mean, for him, I'm going to start there because if the player's got to know that he's capable. In spite of how many times you've done it, the confidence is such a fragile thing. So he started out that game kind of rugged, and then he settled in because he began to pitch. He was just fastball early, and they were on it. And then all of a sudden he got to his curve and his changeup, and things changed around pretty quickly. So I think the lesson learned there is for him just to go ahead and pitch and not just try to be predominantly a fastball guy. But he was very happy after that game. And now when he walks on the bus and they give him a high five or on the airplane, you can see that he's naturally feeling much better about himself. So that's more indicative of what he can look like. He needs to pitch and not just go out there and attempt to blow fastballs by everybody.
And with Cole Hamels being down for a little while longer, I would imagine that every start from your guys is critical considering what Cole has meant to your squad.
Of course. Cole, gosh, I mean, I wish you guys knew him like I know him. This is a first-class professional baseball player who happens to be a left-handed pitcher. I just enjoy the conversations with him. He is so level-headed and professional. I mean, it's really a pleasure to work with this guy. So we're hoping that it's not going to take too long. I talked to him yesterday. He's actually feeling a little bit better. So we will know more. I haven't gotten the final read on the MRI yet. Our Dr. Grizzo is supposed to check that out. And once he does, we'll have a better example of the timetable. But this guy is so pertinent to our success. And I can't emphasize enough what a wonderful human being this fellow is.
Jason Hayward, watching him this year and last night was another good example of a lot of the hard hit balls actually getting through for Jay Hay. Is there any difference at what he is at the plate, or is he just getting some good BABIP luck?
No, he's made some nice adjustments. He's made some really nice adjustments. If you could replay the mental tape, I'd say as of the last 10 days or 2 weeks, you've seen very few of those rollover ground balls on the pull side that come off the handle of the bat or the label area. He's definitely getting the barrel to the ball a lot more consistently, and that's why you're seeing the better results. I just think he's hitting the ball hard more consistently, and thus you're getting the better results. He looks better. I watch very closely. I like a lot what he's doing, and I really anticipate he can continue along this path.
Joe, do you think that you'll tinker maybe with whether it's lineup or defensive alignment over the next few days, or had you already got your Pirates series lineups ready and you'll stay with what you already have?
Yeah, they're in there. There's not a whole lot to deal with right now. We have a three-man bench because of all the people in the bullpen. So today, Descalso, Caratini, and Bodie will start off on the bench. But obviously, in the National League, all these guys are going to play. Positionally speaking, these are the tried and true methods. This is what we've done and done really well within the past, and it's gonna play well again in the future. To just change for the sake of change is not necessarily a good thing. There's really not a whole lot of different methods we can employ with this particular group, and actually it's still a very versatile group. So you're going to see pretty much the same. The guys know who's playing the rest of the week, and then on Friday I'll set up Saturday and Sunday.
There you have Joe Maddon, who says he understands that the onus is on him, and in his words, it should be. He says he doesn't worry about it, and maybe the guy's old enough and established enough that that is absolutely true. But he talks about a moment. This is, I do think it's more than a moment.
Oh, yeah, it's more than a moment. The thing I don't like to talk about in this moment is wasting the last month of Jason Hayward. So I won't. I'm not going to talk about it because it makes me feel terrible. Jason Hayward's been absolutely terrific. See if Dylan Cease is going to be any good this afternoon. We got a guest coming up and give us the scouting report.
This segment's brought to you by True Green. Ready for a mosquito-free summer, Chicago? Just call True Green. They'll eliminate biting mosquitoes in your yard within 24 hours of application, guaranteed. Call 1-866-TRUE-GREEN or visit truegreen.com/mosquito-free-summer. Additional restrictions may apply. See truegreen.com for details. Michael Pacheco, broadcaster for the Charlotte Knights, is going to give you your thumbnail scouting report, everything you need to know about a White Sox prospect making his debut today in the first game of a doubleheader. So keep it here. You've got WSCR, the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
In the minor leagues, I saw him throw. He threw very well. But then all of a sudden, they make one error. He could have come back and pitch better. It seemed like he was boring there. You know, I see a couple games like, oh, wow, really? He could have pitched in the big league like that. I don't think he could have helped. But I think this gives a great solid expectation. He's very good. I think he got good enough stuff.
Ozzie Guillen. I think he meant bored rather than boring, but you never know with Ozzie. He might have been both bored and boring.
Usually a really fun guy, but in the minors, he was very boring.
This segment is brought to you by Patrick Cadillac. Let's find out about the newest member of the Chicago White Sox from a guy who has watched him play a whole lot of baseball down in Charlotte. AAA Charlotte Knights broadcaster Michael Pacheco, who is on Twitter at MikePacheco81, joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Thanks for joining us, Mike. What's up?
Hey, I don't know that I'd call him boring, but
I'm not sure what Ozzie meant by that. Maybe it's just like he seems like he has nothing left to prove at that level. I don't know.
Well, or you know what I was thinking too is he's so even keel. He's not very demonstrative on the mound, so maybe he was referring to that. You know, I mean, some guys. I mean, we had a game where Thiago Vieira had a really big save for us in the ninth inning, and he was dancing on the mound. So I don't know. Maybe it was his lack of dancing after strikeouts. I don't know.
So Cease is, though, kind of a cool character. He understands himself fairly well, and he's coming up to the big leagues after one of his worst runs of baseball since he came over to the White Sox. What do you make of him being called up at this point? Why is this a guy where it makes sense to do that?
I think that, in a word, it's composure. I mean, he's got great composure. You see that in some of the outings where he kind of got batted around. He took it personally, but it wasn't like it threw him off. And, you know, this little mini slide did come after a win against Gwinnett at home, and that was the game where Ian Hamilton got that line drive off the face. And I'm not saying that had anything to do with it, but, you know, during that at bat, you know, obviously everybody was concerned about Ian, and then Dylan had to go back and pitch after that and gave up a home run to Sal Giardina. And, you know, then he had a couple outings where, three that really weren't his best. His last outing, ironically, a little bit incomplete. He only pitched an inning, and that's because we had this. I don't know how much time you guys spent in the South, but everything looked clean and green, and we're in the middle of the first inning. All of a sudden, the storm pops up and dumped a bunch of rain on us. So, but he looked. I mean, for that one inning, he looked pretty good and worked out of some trouble. So, I mean, I think he's a guy that when you look at his stuff, I mean, I think his stuff is ready, and I think sometimes numbers don't really tell the whole story. It's they want to see, you know, is he working on his changeup getting better? And I think they checked that box off. You know, was the slider getting better? I think that got checked off. And, you know, we already know he's got the great fastball, high 90s. And, I mean, when that curveball is working, it's ridiculous. I mean, he's got a really good hammer.
I'm always now mindful of paring back rather than adding, especially for a young pitcher. We're learning so much more now about how teams are saying, look, if you have great pitches, use your great pitches more. Don't try to mix in other things. How active has the experimentation been? And I guess I'm curious, is there an equivalent of a pitch lab there? Are they using cameras? Are they checking his spin rates and the tilt and all that stuff like all the good teams are?
I tell you what, this is the first year I've noticed the expansion of analytics at our level. I think it was last year or the year before, everybody installed TrackMan at the AAA level. I think maybe at all levels, but I know at AAA we had it last year, and so that's been a big help. And, you know, the White Sox have had some personnel down here, and they have. There's been a lot of work down here. You know, Stephen Caddy's a really good pitching coach. You know, just ask any of the guys that have come through Charlotte. Lucas Giolito, a prime example. I mean, the work that Steve did with him. So I think, yeah, I mean, this is, I think a lab is a great way to put it. This is where you kind of tinker with things and you try to get on track. And don't forget, when you look at numbers this year, you have to be careful because, you know, when you look at last year, Rochester had the best ERA in the league, 3.39. This year, Gwinnett has it almost a run higher, 4.26. And we're on pace to hit over 200 home runs, which would break a team record.
I guess it's better to use the same ball as you're going to in the big leagues, but those numbers are fairly eye-popping. What do you know about Cease's experimentation and kind of arrival with the slider? I mean, it's been a big deal for him, I guess. When did he, to your knowledge, start throwing it, start really working it in? And was there an aha moment, an aha start for him with that pitch?
I would probably say it was the start he had against Gwinnett where he struck out 11. I mean, he was using both sides of the plate. And he was changing speeds. That's probably, I think, where he maybe started to get, you know, a little more comfortable with his off-speed pitches. And I think the big key is now he's pitching the off-speed stuff with confidence and on both sides of the plate. So he's still going to go probably 70% with his top two pitches, maybe even higher than that.
Yeah.
But the ability to just mix that other stuff in and have confidence in it, I mean, and you got to have that at the big league level, especially when you talk about, you know, the last couple of years and what the baseballs are doing. You just can't be a two-pitch guy. Even if you have two great pitches, you just can't do it.
We also know that the pace at which a pitcher works often has to do with how much thinking he does out there. And we know that Dylan Cease is a thoughtful guy who is, I don't want to say in his own head in a bad way, but is very self-aware, as he's been described. And you mentioned Giolito, and Giolito himself talked about taking too much time between pitches, and he didn't realize how much he was overthinking until when they were trying to beat the rain. I think it was against Toronto, and they realized that they had to make the game official, and the rain started coming down, and McCann is like, look, don't think, just go. Just start pumping this and dare him to put it in play, and that was a light going on for Giolito. It's like, look, I can work faster, and everything is going to be easier on me. Is that something that you've seen? Are there any pace issues with Cease being as thoughtful a pitcher as he is in between selections?
No, and that should be a rule. I think every minor league pitcher should be fined if they don't work with pace. I say it somewhat facetiously, but I mean, I think that's the biggest detriment that I've seen in the last couple of years. And this isn't White Sox; this is across the board. I mean, guys just taking too much time on the mound, and you know, we have the pitch clock now, so they can't really go too far into it. But I think you're right. I mean, when you look at, you know, even 20 years ago, guys like Roger Clemens or Greg Maddux, I mean, they got the ball and they went. And I think there's merit to that. And Cease, I think he's worked with good tempo this year. I didn't notice that he was taking a lot of time in between. I never thought that.
So Dylan it won't be the first time, but he's going to face a bunch of questions from White Sox reporters today about the trade from the Cubs to the White Sox, what it meant for both franchises, what it meant for him to move over. What kind of a guy is he when he talks about his past? Because his minor league past and even his draft past with the Tommy John in high school and stuff is an interesting one. Does he enjoy getting into that kind of stuff? Has he pushed some of that thing aside? Where is he at?
I just think he's, to go back to the composure and maturity, like for 23, soon to be 20, he'll be 24 in December. For a guy that age, he's just, I don't want to say unflappable, but he's got it under control. And I don't think he worries about stuff like that. In talking with him this year and in some of the interviews I've read, you know, he's done what Eloy did last year, Kopech a little bit. They got to the point of AAA and they said, look, we know we're close, but, you know, we can't control when we get called up. So what we can control is when we go out every fifth day, or in Eloy's case, every day, and just put up good numbers, put up good swings, throw good pitches. And I think that was his mentality. And I think that's part of the reason why you're seeing him getting called up, because he's had such a mature and confident approach.
Talking with Michael Pacheco, Charlotte Knights announcer on the Bernstein and McKnight Show on Sports Radio 670, the score at the bottom of the hour, brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the number 17 Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. What kind of guy is Cease? Is he a good talker? Is he a willing talker?
Yeah, I mean, he's been, with all the, you know, obviously there's been a lot of attention with him, so he's handled all the interview requests well. He speaks well. He's a nice guy to talk to. I mean, I've talked to him a couple of times. He's one of these guys that, I don't know if Greg Maddux is the right comparison, and I don't mean on the field, but he's just really kind of pleasant, you know, comfortable to talk to. But when he gets on the mound, it's like the flip switches, and he's a competitive guy.
I know you don't make the decisions about the roster there at Charlotte, but I do want to ask you about one more White Sox
sure
prospect.
That? Possible, yeah,
well, I mean, maybe you do. I don't know. If you do,
I
please.
Wish I had that. Hey, you guys give me that power? That's awesome. Thank you.
So here's my question then. If you did have that power, or at least some sort of crystal ball that allowed you to see future roster moves, Luis Robert has been absolutely tearing it up at AA Birmingham. It's 214 at-bats for the guy now. Is it possible, from your perspective, outside looking in, I know a lot of White Sox fans are all about Luis Robert at this point, is it possible you see him at Charlotte and have him work through three levels this season?
I think it's possible. I mean, you look at, with Aloy last year, I think there was some question as to originally whether they were going to keep him in Birmingham all year, and then he did come up to Charlotte. And I think with something like that, it's a touch and a feel type thing, and also could come with need too. But I think if they feel like he's ready and he's, you know, I know Rick Hahn's big on the phrase checking the boxes. Mm-hmm. You know, I think when he checks all those boxes, you know, whether it's, you know, after the All-Star break, because that's coming up soon, or maybe even before the beginning of August, I think it's possible. I mean, I think you never know what's going to happen, you know, whether there's a move at the big league level and one of our guys has to go up. So I think it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Just got this news from the White Sox beat reporter for the Tribune, Lamond Pope. Says Dylan Cease will wear uniform number 84. According to Baseball Reference, he will be the third player in Major League history to wear number 84. I would have been here all day, never gotten this.
Never.
Prince Fielder with Texas and JT Snow with Boston. Is there anything behind this we need to know about? Do you know the origins of this desire?
I do not. I do not, because he was born in 95, so it can't be an age thing. I don't know.
And he wore 25 in, is it 25? 25 in Charlotte?
Yeah, I think that's right, yeah.
Huh. That's bizarre. Yeah. That's very weird. Huh.
Mike, thank you
very
much.
Well, like Aloy picked his number because he wanted to do something that was kind of different, so maybe it's that kind of deal.
Yeah, but Aloy's that guy, though. You know, know that he's always doing something. He has no problem calling attention to himself. I'm very curious about the story behind this, and I'm sure we'll probably get it when Cease walks into the clubhouse if he's talking to anybody. Anyway, Mike, we appreciate the scouting report. Thank you.
Absolutely, guys.
That is Michael Pacheco, Charlotte Knights broadcaster.
Right, James Fegan, who covers the White Sox, tweeting this. The White Sox have added Cease. He will wear 84. He's got a quote from Cease saying that he'd wear any number in the big leagues. So 84 fits Dylan Cease just fine. If I'm buying jerseys, you know, or if I'm a parent of a kid who needs to have a Dylan Cease jersey, I may be waiting until next season.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be all
I
that convinced
trust it either.
Unless you want to go like old school. Yeah, I got the first Dylan Cease jersey, the 84. Now, I was in early.
Now, technically, he's being added as this new rule 26th player for a doubleheader.
That's correct.
Right. So it's not like fully rostered.
No, but he will be. The expectation is that he will be, and they'll make a roster move to send somebody out or to an injured list or whatever. You know, whatever you do with that rotation to fit him in for tomorrow.
Chris Kampka points out that Snow wore 84 because Snow's father, Jack, the former wide receiver, wore 84 in the NFL, and Prince Fielder was born in 84, and that's why he wore it. Huh.
I did not know that.
The more you know.
There
the
you
Midday
go.
Midway is coming up. I am incensed. Well, I shouldn't be incensed. I should be kind of proud, actually. Somebody's stealing my bit.
I got a science report that is going to break your brain, and a new product is on the market for those of you looking to have a beverage tomorrow.
If the science report is the one that I just saw, Is it NBC?
I didn't check. I don't remember.
Because it is unbelievable.
Okay. It might be the same one then. We'll have to confer during the break.
Subatomic particles involved?
Yeah, could be.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it is. And it's absolutely astonishing and terrifying. And I also have an incident where the headline gave me an idea for this story that could have been spectacular. Instead, it's kind of creepy, but it could have been really, really good, and I could have been somebody I would have admired.
Midday Midway's on the way. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
The Midday Midway is brought to you by Bubba Burger. Now that the weather everyone's been waiting for has finally arrived, ensure that your 4th of July celebration really sizzles thanks to Bubba Burger. Look for their delicious burgers in the freezer section at your local grocery store and super center. We talked plenty of baseball, just trying to get to the bottom of this Cub malaise. And we heard Joe Maddon talk. We are going to hear Theo Epstein talk at 2 o'clock today with McNeil and Parkins. But the rubber's not meeting the road. We're not the talk and the action are just disconnected. There was a big team meeting, and the way Joe's talking about his team and the fact that there was a meeting is indeed meaningful. We talked to Michael Pacheco of the Charlotte Knights about Dylan Cease, the former Cubs farmhand, who is now a member of the White Sox full-fledgedly and will make his Major League debut early this afternoon.
I am going to break your brain.
Okay.
I read the first couple of paragraphs of this. Mine is broken. I don't know that there's any returning to the old brain. Maybe I don't want that anyway. This is from NBC. At Oak Ridge National Laboratory in Eastern Tennessee.
That's where the Oak Ridge boys are. They do all the work.
They do all of their lab work.
Every single bit of it.
They're in the music lab. Physicist Leah Broussard is trying to open a portal to a parallel universe. She calls it an oscillation that would lead her to mirror matter, but the idea is fundamentally the same. In a series of experiments she plans to run at Oak Ridge this summer, Broussard will send a beam of subatomic particles down a 50-foot tunnel, past a powerful magnet, and into an impenetrable wall. If the setup is just right, and if the universe cooperates, some of those particles will transform into mirror image versions of themselves, allowing them to tunnel right through the wall.
What?
If that happens, Broussard will have uncovered the first evidence of a mirror world right alongside our own.
Oh, boy.
It's pretty wacky, Broussard says of her mind-bending exploration. The mirror world, assuming it exists, would have its own laws of mirror physics and its own mirror history. You wouldn't find a mirror version of yourself there.
Why not?
Spock with the goatee. I don't know. But current theory allows that you might find mirror atoms and mirror rocks, maybe even mirror planets and stars. Collectively, they could form an entire shadow world just as real as our own, but completely cut off from us. Broussard says her initial search for the mirror world won't be especially difficult. This is a pretty straightforward experiment, she says, that we cobbled together with parts we found lying around using equipment and resources we already had available at Oak Ridge, plus the Oak Ridge boys have been great.
Mm-hmm.
But if they unequivocally detect even a single mirror particle, it would prove the visible universe is only half of what is out there and that the known laws of physics are only half of a much broader set of rules.
My
I am terrified.
God, man.
I'm terrified. How is that a thing?
We're getting close. It's different than the quantum physics idea.
I don't know. This is a Marvel movie.
Universes.
This is insane.
This is one specific parallel universe, not the same theory as an infinite number of parallel universes.
Well, if there's
right?
one, why aren't there more? I have no idea. I've tried to read through the rest of the article, and I keep on getting more and more scared. This is absolutely insane.
She's going to find a portal to the mirror world with neutrons. Wow. Quit stealing my bit, City of Denver. anybody who knows me and has listened for many years, I want to say it was several years ago at the afternoon show golf outing at Seven Bridges when Barry Rosner was sitting with me and we were watching Canada geese absolutely ravage the course, just tearing up the tee box, just crapping everywhere, eating everything. Yeah. Canada geese are a scourge. I know they're protected, and you know I'm a bird guy. I'm huge into birds of prey, etc. But geese are the worst. So as a joke, Barry and I proposed. He just wanted to kill them, and I said, "You kill them, I'll cook them."
All right,
because they're edible and delicious. And I said, "What we should do is find some way for people who don't have food to be able to eat these geese that we're killing that are ruining everybody's lives."
Yeah, all right.
So that was our bit. Our bit was we had a food truck that would drive around and make lovely roasted geese for everybody who wanted. This from Denver, Colorado. Denver has a solution to what it views as an overpopulation of Canada geese. It's putting goose on the menu for those in need. According to Scott Gilmore, the deputy executive director for Denver Parks and Recreation, they round up the geese and they collect them this time of year because the geese can't fly. And they're taking them to a processor, and they're getting processed, and they're being donated to needy families. Denver has partnered with the U.S. Department of Agriculture to start reducing the Canada goose population, neither saying exactly where the meat is going for processing or where it's ending up, but it is going to hungry families, they're saying, somewhere in Colorado. The city has tried everything else, including a machine called a goosinator. God knows what that is.
It finds a mirror world. It
says coating eggs in cooking oil so they won't hatch. Despite the efforts, the population's grown to 5,000 geese. They can contribute a pound of poop a day.
Oh, gross.
A pound. So
one goose?
They are round. Yeah, one. So they are rounding them up, and they are processing them, and people are eating them. And I think that is absolutely awesome because it's my idea!
How do you cook geese? What's your goose recipe?
Oh, you roast it like a turkey, anything you do with it, you can do with a goose.
All right. Police in Tennessee say a man told officers he drunkenly broke into a nature center and tried to play fetch with a bobcat, accidentally allowing the creature to escape.
Oops.
21-year-old Caden Melia. He's got to turn himself over to a county jail by July 14th. An affidavit says Melia told police he's been drinking when he broke into Chattanooga's Reflection and Riding Arboretum and Nature Center last month. He used a rock to break into Evie the Bobcat's cage, tried to play fetch. She escaped. Amelia was cited in lieu of an arrest on charges of criminal trespassing and vandalism. Authorities say a second person may have been involved, and I figure, of course there was a second person. Someone was obviously holding Melia's beer.
By the way, there's a texter that says that the Oak Ridge Boys, that it's not a joke, that the Oak Ridge Boys actually were named that because they were a barbershop quartet. They were a singing group that would perform for the staff members at the nuclear research plant in Oak Ridge.
I'll believe that.
That's how they became named the Oak Ridge Boys.
Obviously, we have to fact check that, but I'll believe it.
Yeah, I don't know why anybody would decide to make that up and text it in, but I believe it. The headline's great. The story, not so much. It's kind of creepy, but it could have been really awesome. The headline in the AP, Wisconsin man gets jail for clogging women's toilets.
What?
Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Man has been sentenced to 150 days in jail for repeatedly clogging women's toilets, including at places where he worked. So, I know what you're picturing. Keep picturing what you're picturing and imagining what you're imagining. Yeah, 35-year-old Patrick Beeman has pleaded no contest to 5 counts of misdemeanor criminal damage to property. 30-day sentence was recommended for the crime, but Judge Kent Hoffman has given him 30 days for each count to be served consecutively.
We got Hoffman.
3 years probation, pay $5,500 in restitution. He says he gets urges to do odd things. He looks for bottles in the garbage to clog the toilets of women's bathrooms and cause them to overflow.
Well, that's weird.
See, I imagine if you're doing it, like really doing it the natural way, like if you are setting out
organic toilet clogging.
Right, if you are like a free-range toilet clogger, That's deserving of some weird and grudging respect on some level, and probably a segment on the I'm Fat podcast.
If that's his thing, you know that's not the thing he should have been arrested for. You know he's into other stuff that he should have been arrested for a long damn time
ago. This is entirely creepy and awful, but if you're shoving bottles in the toilet, that's nothing. I mean, anybody can do that. But I thought from the headline that this person could on purpose know it's like, oh, not enough yet, not enough yet. There, that's it. That's got it. That's got it. That'll do it. And then he's able to just leave because he knows exactly, depending on the model and make of toilet, he knows exactly.
What is that, a Kohler?
Yeah. All right, oh, yeah, that's American Standard. Okay, good. What is that? All right, no problem there.
That is the Midday Midway. We do it every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. A little shift in schedule, and it's a welcome one. Len Casper usually joins us tomorrow. He's going to join us today because we're off for the 4th to talk a little Cubs with the television play-by-play man Len Casper when we get back. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.